Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Somewhere in Vegas here on blogtalkradio.com. I'm Mark McHugh. I'm your host. I'm very privileged to actually, before I get to our guest right now, I'll let you guys know at the bottom of the hour, we're going to have really an amazing actor named David Busby, who is going to be a part of the new series Sinners and Saints, and he's also going to be a part of the Bobby Brown story on BET coming up in a bit as well. We'll have him at the bottom of the hour, but I'm very privileged to have a really exciting band out of Canada. Their new CD is coming out this Friday, May the 4th, and they're going to have a big, huge opening celebration. So if you're in the Toronto area, please check them out as well. You'll be able to check them out pretty cool because they're going to be doing some touring coming up this summer. I'm very privileged to have Across the Board on with me right now, and Jacqueline, I believe, is on with us at the moment. How are you doing, Jacqueline?
Great. Thank you for having us on.
Yeah, we were talking before the break. I mean, you're originally from Alberta, which is, you know, it's really, really cool as well. I mean, and you had mentioned something about being a junior league figure skater. Two questions come to mind. One is the fact, I mean, did you go to the Olympics when they were in Calgary?
Yes, we did. We saw Katarina Witt skate and that famous Battle of the Carmens.
Yeah, it was an exciting thing. I mean, I was in Montana at the time. I grew up in Montana, and, you know, I had a bunch of friends that were making the trip all the way up to Calgary to watch the Olympics as well. And it's probably one of the most memorable, Winter Olympics in recent memory, besides, of course, obviously the ones that have just happened. But it was there was a lot of stories coming out of that as well. You know, and then you said that you actually figure skated, and that's kind of interesting as well. And what did it mean to you to be able to see some of the gals figure skate?
Well, it's great. I mean, I skated all the way since I was about 4 years of age, and then I turned professional when I went to university and college just to basically pay my rent and my tuition. And it was something that was a big part of my life, actually, between music and skating and skiing. When you live in middle of nowhere, Alberta, there's really nothing else to do. We all did a lot of sports, and we all followed the teams, and, you know, it was a big thing whenever anything Canadian happened, of course, as it still is for us, right? Or should I say hate?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's great. I mean, you know, it's been interesting. I mean, you know, right now I was just talking to you before we went on is the fact that there's a huge scene going up in Toronto right now in terms of the rock scene. And I have had several bands and several artists that have been on the show. You know, tell me a little bit about, you know, with that. I'm pretty sure there's a pretty good community up there in terms of that. And obviously there's a lot of places to play.
We have an amazing live music scene here in Toronto. There's probably over 100 live music venues in Toronto alone. And you're going to find bands on the indie scene from just about any genre, right through to some of our label mates, including a pop rocker by the name of Jessica Speciali, who's actually releasing her CD at the same time that we are. But you can really get any kind of music in Toronto.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, it's very, very like almost like Austin down here in the States, where, you know, there is just a huge, huge
awesome
live music scene down here as well. I mean, and they
even
have a festival surrounded as well. I mean, is there any festivals up there? I think there are a couple festivals that go up there, correct?
We've got lots of festivals up here, from, you know, Canadian Music Week through to, you know,
North by Northeast.
We've got Osaga. How do you say that? Osaga, which is Oceaga. It's like just a few hours away in Montreal. We've got Indie Week in Toronto. We've got Echo Beach. We've got a jazz festival. We've got The Fringe. Oh, my God. It goes on and on. We've
Canadian
got
Music Week.
Yeah, I just said that. Canadian Music Week is actually happening next long. Event, which is a combination of sort of a conference for musicians, for producers, for media people, as well as showcases of indie talent from across the country and beyond. We have American acts that come up. We have European acts that come over. It's a big deal. It's starting actually this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, and to have your CD party kind of kick it off, it makes a lot of sense too. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to say the least, and you know, be able to see all that as well. Let's talk a little about your beginning. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say it's fun to network with all the different, you know, indie artists and label people and A&R people and producers that come through, and just bookers and festival bookers and buyers, and just, you know, for artists like us who are on an independent label to really get a handle on the music industry as it is today, which is a lot different than it was 5 or 10 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy the way that things have kind of changed in terms of where what used to be, you know, where it used to be A&R and, you know, the idea of having to have a huge label behind you versus now where, you know, anybody could pretty much produce music, but, you know, you got to have to really go out and grind pretty much to kind of make your name for yourself. So, you know, it's an interesting contrast. It's a good thing that we're getting a lot more of different voices out there, like your band and a bunch of other people that have really kind of been innovative, but yet, but you have to really work to kind of make yourself stand out. Oh, we lost her. She'll be calling back in shortly. But anyway, like I said, David Busby will be on the show at the bottom of the hour, so make sure you guys check that out as well, and we will get Jacqueline back on the line here. Are you there, Jacqueline?
Yeah, I am. I don't know. I just got cut off. It was very weird.
Yeah, it was.
Anyways,
you know, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying that it's good and it's bad because it's good in that anybody can now bring their music to the world. You don't need that middleman. You don't need that label. You don't need that A&R guy. However, you also have to be able to filter through the noise. You have to get to your fans through that sea of noise because in addition to some amazing music out there that you would not hear if they didn't have the luck to get in front of the right people, you now have to also hear all the crap out there that stands in the way of you hearing all of the great stuff that you wouldn't hear otherwise.
Exactly. I mean, and it takes a little bit for you to kind of stand out as well. It takes a little bit more work, but I think it's worth it in the end. And that's what touring's all about too. I think it gives you more towards the touring business a little bit more, and that's how you garner fans more often. And personal interaction, you know, obviously the international social media and all that as well has also changed the way it is. And I'm pretty sure fans have reached out to you and let them know how you feel and all that as well. I mean, what's it like interacting with the fans?
Well, it's awesome because we started out, honestly, as a YouTube band. It's about 2013, so it's about 5 years ago, we started covering songs, doing YouTube videos every week, and we gathered a fan base that way, which quite an international fan base. But we did not have much of a local fan base. So when we started writing our own original music and trying to tour on the local scene, the only thing we had going for us was our 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 view, you know, YouTube videos that a lot of other bands in the area didn't. So we were playing to a handful of fans locally, but we were playing to like a large audience globally. So it was sort of backwards. But then gradually over the next couple of albums, so this is our second full-length album and our third record, we gathered our local fan base, we were able to interact with them, see who they were, you know, figure out what kind of music they liked, what was it about us that they liked, and get a better handle on how to communicate with them. And then we started sort of opening up our social media to more stories, more daily vlogs, more connecting with the fans, letting them know who we are, not just about our music, but like, what does our day look like? What
more
is the
content?
More content, yeah, behind the scenes, you know. What does our studio look like? Let me tour you through our backyard. Let's tour you through our you know, what? Look at all my guitars. This is all the music we play. This is what it looks like when we do this. And then that kind of openness is something that we modeled after another Toronto band called Walk Off the Earth. They are very open. Ever since they broke from their Five Peeps on a Guitar video, when they did a cover on YouTube a few years back, they basically have been an open book, and they, you know, allow people in. And that's what we wanted to be. We wanted to be a band where people could connect with us on a variety of different levels, and we didn't want to define what those levels were. This is who we are. What do you like? It's fine. Hang on for the ride.
Well, speaking of the album, it's an interesting concept. I think the term rock opera has kind of been thrown about. Tell me a little bit about the concept of this album, you know, a little bit about how you how the creation of it, and when you're getting into the studio, what kind of was your inspiration for this album?
Well, last year we took, in 2017 summer, we took a coast-to-coast tour by train. We went from one coast on the east to the other coast on the west. It took us 4 days by train, and we stopped along the way, and we played shows all the way along the way. That's right, half plane, well, part plane, part train. So we started in Newfoundland, did shows in Newfoundland, and then in Ottawa, and then we came to Toronto, hopped on the train, and then we did shows halfway in Winnipeg, two-thirds of the way in Jasper, Alberta, and then in Vancouver. And all the way along this ride, we saw our own country. And we did it to celebrate our 150th birthday, because it was Canada 150 this past July. And we wrote the album because we were trying to think, how can we break a band? What is the formula in 2018 for breaking a band? What does that mean? What do we have to come up against? And we started reflecting because we had days and days on the train with nothing to do except think and practice and write about what it takes to break a band, the highs, the lows, et cetera, and all came together as kind of a story. And so the 8 songs on the album reflect that journey from a small town where I grew up, getting on the train, coming to Toronto to share my music with the world, you know, finding love, finding those horrible people who take money and things from you, and then sort of relaxing into what my music is and what I wanted to portray, and getting to the other side of that and understanding that it's not about the fame or the fortune. It's about doing what you love. It's about connecting with the fans.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I've taken trains before. Actually, I've actually taken the show on a train before. I've actually did a podcast off a train, but yeah, I mean, it's interesting to say the least to be a part of a train. I mean, it, you know, I think people don't think about it that, you know, sometimes it's nice to have, you know, take a nice little train trip to be able to see the country a little bit as well. I'm pretty sure that's pretty much the same thing up there in up in Canada, where there's very beautiful scenery as well. So, yeah, it was probably exciting for you guys to be able to see the country that way.
It was inspiring, and actually we did it there and back, so we did it twice. It was amazing, and I'm glad we did it because I don't know if we would have done it otherwise. And there's this fantastic program that Via Rail, which is our passenger train in Canada, offers. It's called the Artist on Board program. And basically you, for a free trip and amazing food, play 3 shows a day to the train in different spots. You have to get off and play at the stations. And, you know, you go from one side of the country to the other and back. It's amazing.
I kind of wish they had that down here. I don't wish Amtrak would do it down here. That would be interesting.
It's a great way to see your own country.
Yeah, you know, and we were talking again off air that, you know, you play a lot of instruments. The only thing that you don't pretty much play is brass. You said
know,
you had a little bit
not,
of a problem with brass.
Yeah, it's not from lack of trying. Let me tell you, I finally bought a plastic trombone because I'm like, what the heck? I play all these stringy things, including like a Chinese harp. I play bass and guitars and ukuleles and tenor ukuleles and banjo and mandolin. I play the oboe. I play flute. I play the violin. I play the cello. I play, the saxophone. Man, I love playing the sax. I was always wanted to play a trumpet, though, from the start. Something about it. I don't know. I can't do it. I feel like I can do a double axle on figure skates, and I can't play bloody trumpet. Drives me crazy.
It's just, I mean, you know, with that in mind, I mean, you know, how easy is it for you to kind of pick up a thing? I mean, other than brass, obviously, but the rest of the other instruments, I mean, do you just have a knack for kind of picking up instruments?
I think what it is there's a commonality. So I grew up classically trained as a musician. I started playing guitar at 10, and then I got into bands in school, played an oboe, played flute, played sax. So I knew music, started playing the drums and stage bands in about grade 12 up here, which is our last year. And then started picking up other stringy instruments because those sort of seemed intuitive for me. And then once we lost the frets, like in a cello, you don't have frets, and a violin, you don't have frets like a guitar. That got a bit challenging to figure out where to put my fingers. So the strings all sort of work together. You just have to learn where the notes are that you're playing. From that, it's like woodwind instruments are similar too. Once you can play a flute and an oboe and a sax, you can pretty much play everything, I'm sure. It's just like everything is very similar. You just have to spend a little bit of time with it and figure out what the sound's supposed to be. Our drummer, who's a co-writer on the album, he's not classically trained, but this guy can pick up any instrument and make it sound like it's supposed to. Even rap, it's crazy. He's just amazing. And that's the kind of thing I think that comes with just touching these instruments. I think anybody can play an instrument. You just have to spend some time with it, you know?
Yeah. You know, I mean, and I said it's kind of really unique that in terms of the fact that, you know, some people just have that knack to be able to pick it up and all that as well. And obviously that has helped you out in terms of you know, songwriting as well. You kind of probably have it in your head how a song is going to go and all that. And with that in mind, can I tell me a little bit about your process in terms of coming up with a song? Do you sometimes, you know, is it the lyrics that come first? Is it the music come first? Do you find out that it's pretty much 50-50? Kind of tell me that little bit about that process.
Well, for me, the lyrics always come last unless I have a title or something I want to talk about. I know it sounds weird because I just wrote a rock opera, which is like poetry, you know, in lines of like acts. But usually what happens is I'll hear a riff, or I'll catch sort of a chord progression, and I'll start playing around with it. And then once I like the chord progression, I'll throw a melody on top of it. I'll just basically be humming along to this chord progression. I usually at that point will throw it to my co-writer, Paul Nanua, who is on our album, who plays drums on our album, who's an amazing musician. And he would bring me back some sort of beat or riff or something. We would build a bridge together. And then after that, just in terms of the way that we wrote this past album, after that, somehow the lyrics come. It seems like as we're doing the melody, I kind of have an idea of what I'm talking about, what I want this song to be about by nature, by emotion. And then a lyric riff will come, just like a catchy phrase or something. And then, boom, the rest of the song just gets built around it. And I honestly have to admit, I grab a thesaurus and I grab a friggin' rhymezone.com dictionary sometimes to try and figure out words I'm missing to make it flow a bit better. But for the most part, music, it's riffs, music, melody, and then lyrics.
I mean, yeah, it's interesting. I always, you know, every songwriter has a different way of putting about it. So it's, you know, it's interesting to say the least. I know, you know, a lot of musicians I've had on the show had mentioned the fact that, you know, they carry either a notebook around, or nowadays, since they have a smartphone, you have something where you may have a GarageBand app or something like that where you just put down a melody and all that as well. Do you end up finding yourself using that a lot of times where you just, you know, you have a melody in your mind, you know, in a various place and just, you know, either hum it or play it or something like that into your phone?
Yeah, I do. I voice note my phone constantly. And then honestly, to be very honest, I usually forget about them. And then they come back to me later. In terms of what I usually do for our producers is if I come up with a melody I like or something that I have on my scratch track, I will just record it and then I'll come home and I'll plug into my version of GarageBand, which is the PreSonus Studio One. And I'll just lay down a quick guitar to a clicker and then put a vocal over, throw a quick harmony on it. It takes me about an hour. And then I'll just fire that off to our producer. And it'll let him sit and stew over it for a while. That's usually the process. We call that a scratch track. So we've got actually a series of scratch tracks right now already for our next album. And that'll be exciting because we're going to be going into studio in June.
That's great. I mean, and, you know, with that in mind, what's probably the fastest song that you've written?
I was procrastinating doing my income taxes this year. And Andy was like, Andy's my partner. He's also our bassler. He's like, Jackie, you got to do your income tax. You know, it's due today. And I'm like, no, I don't want to. So I sat down and wrote a song called It Shouldn't Be This Hard in about 45 minutes. And that's on the album. That's on this album that you can hear.
Okay. Oh, that's awesome. That's cool. Another interesting question I like to ask a lot of the musicians that come on here is the fact that do you name any of your instruments at all?
Yeah, I do. My Taylor guitar is called Blondie Taylor because she's clearly a beige Taylor. We call her Blondie Taylor. And then I have a Fifth Avenue Go Down hollow body that is called my baby. So, yeah. Andy, do you name your guitar?
No, because I always beat mine up. I go through guitars and stuff like crazy. So I don't like to name them because that would just be cruel.
Oh, my. Well, this is the exact opposite of what I usually hear because you're probably the only second female to ever say that they've named any of their instruments. Everybody else, all the rest of the women don't name their instruments, but the men always do, seems like. So, yeah. I mean, how many guitars do you go through?
Oh, my God. One every 6 months. He's terrible.
Well, they like to fall and
they like to fall
that kind of stuff. You know,
they get
banged up. You know,
we've had a busy couple of years touring. Honestly, we've been playing shows every 2 weeks, often sometimes every week. So we've had it all. I remember falling on stage a couple of times. I dropped my guitar probably three. I'm really a klutz on stage. Not once we get into the show, just as we're setting up.
The setups are usually interesting.
I always tell people, you want to see something funny? Watch our setup. We have like six roadies that come up bumping into each other, trying to get the drum kit set up and trying to figure me out. Then you usually have the sound guy from the venue trying to figure me out, ignoring everybody else because I'm just an idiot with all of the wiring. And I've got a pedal board and I've usually had two guitars and everything's wired up. And I'm usually wearing high-heeled, clunky rocker shoes, so I'm falling over my ass, dropping guitars, looking for picks, looking for capos, looking for batteries. Oh my God, it's hilarious. It's getting better over the year. It's still a problem.
Yeah, those sound checks. I mean, that must be fun.
Oh my God, I remember standing up at the Bovine after falling on my ass, and I'm like, "Welcome to the Bovine," and everybody just laughs their head off because it was just such a hassle to get there.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's crazy. And I was going to say, you know, is there anything that you prefer? Do you prefer, like, maybe the small intimate stages, or do you like the big ones where in front of a big audience?
I don't know what you're going to say, Andy, but I don't like the big audiences because I can't see them. You know, you got those big lights in your eyes, and you're looking down a hallway, you know, like,
well,
the opera house,
true.
Or
when you hit
like,
any bigger size stage, it's very hard to see.
And people are away
things.
From you because you're on a tall stage, and then there's like barrier where they can't come. So by the time you see the first faces, they really are just black circles.
Silhouette.
Yeah, so it's really hard.
It's hard to focus on the
side. I like a venue of about, to be honest, like under 300 people. That's my favorite venue. Under 300 people, because you usually can like climb down the stage a little bit. It's usually not up in the air, and talk to people a bit, or come out in front of the lights on the edge of the stage and see people. And I like to interact a bit. I do better if I can see my audience.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the big thing too. I mean, you know, a lot of times it's about movement too. The fact that you can move around a little bit. Some of those smaller stages you can't really move around a bit. I'm pretty sure you guys are very familiar with you know the complicated things about
the
whole stage.
We have a fairly big band. When everybody's there, we have a fairly big band. Like we've had 8-9 people in our band before for a show. You get a backup singer or two, and you get, you know, three guitars, and you got keys and Andy and drums and me and. And we all have instruments, and we're all plugged in, and there's cords all over the place. We played on a really small stage for an album release. I think our first one. It was a small stage, the Cameron House. It's a lovely place. The sound is amazing. It's intimate, 90 people. That was our debut album, Jane on Fire, in 2016. But it was a small stage, and I remember thinking, wow, this is itsy-bitsy. I'm a little scared. But we've also played on some pretty big stages, like the Opera House here in Toronto. We've been up on stage with Walk Off the Earth at the Air Canada Centre, and those are huge stages, and I love them too. I'm not going to say I don't, because it's incredible. But yeah, in terms of like just feeling like you're connecting with the audience, the smaller venues are always better.
Hopefully somebody will put us on those big stages one day.
But that doesn't mean I don't want to be on the big stages.
Yeah.
Let's go back there. Absolutely.
You want to make
you know, yeah, I mean, yeah, yeah. And that's the thing, too, is that, you know, a lot of people that like smaller stages like to connect. But, you know, those big stages, you know, that means so much. I mean, to be able to, you know, even open up for people and then eventually, you know, make that transition over. It's just a fun thing, fun time too, as well. And you get to learn a lot. So, and plus you have a lot more room, so you don't have to trip. So
that's true. I think it wouldn't matter for
me
to still trip.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, now have you done any performances down here in the States?
We have not. I'm a member of the Musicians Foundation, American Musicians Foundation, or AFM, AMF. I can't remember which one is. It's as an affiliate of our Canadian side of our Canadian kind of union. And which means that I'm eligible to go down there. It's just that we haven't had any opportunity. There's been a couple of opportunities that have come up. We just not have been able to do them. We had a band exchange with a band in Detroit. We have a band exchange with a band in Las Vegas. We just haven't found the time to do it. But yes,
well,
I'd love to go down. I would too.
Yeah,
I'd
certainly
like to
hope you could make it down here.
Yeah, I would love to.
It would be amazing, but there's all these legalities. Of
just a little bit of stuff,
to play and so on, right?
It's
which
easier when you're on a tour and you've got a tour manager and the lawyer doing all of the permits because you have to get visas. If we just like cross the border with a truck full of a van full of equipment, we
get
stopped pretty fast. We can't ever convince them we're going to go play for free in the street. I mean, it's not gonna fly.
Yeah.
Even if it probably
I hope it eventually gets ironed out because, you know, I think we'd love to have you down here in the States. And to be able to, you know, play like venues like South by Southwest Festival too, it would mean a lot too because
that
that's kind of one of the biggest places. So
yeah, we would love
I
that.
Mean,
we would love that. We've actually been thinking of going down to Vegas and doing a tour of the open mics and recording it for a YouTube series for fun.
Well, speaking of which, I mean, are you doing any music videos for this album?
We are. So this month, well, on May 20th, we're going to actually record the music video for Sonic Boom. We've got the lyric video coming out on May the 4th. And then in June, we're going to record a music video for No Curtain Call, which is the slowest song on the album, kind of the saddest point of the album, where the heroine is sitting in a small little club and people are ignoring her, and basically, you know, the lights go on and that's the end of the show and people walk out and it's like, what's happening? So we're going to do a music video for that, which is the lowest point, and we're going to do a music video for Sonic Boom, which is the highest point, which is the not afraid to try, not afraid to sing to the sky, watch me hit my Sonic Boom.
Well, I mean, that's great. I mean, you know, where's your YouTube channel so people can check it out?
So our YouTube is youtube.com/ATB Music Canada. So ATB stands for Across the Board, ATB Music Canada, or you can just go to acrosstheboardmusic.ca and see it all. Everything will be there, all our links.
We're on pretty much all the platforms.
Yeah, we're on all the platforms, Instagram and Twitter and YouTube. We've got a big channel.
Across the board, we should come up.
Yeah, actually, if you go Across the Board Band on Google, you're going to see about 5 pages of us, which is awesome.
Well, that's great. I mean, you know, yeah, people need to check out YouTube because it sounds like the YouTube, you know, you've really used your YouTube very, very well in terms of gaining fans and really showing off a little bit. I'm pretty sure we'll get more content as the weeks progress, especially when the album comes out this Friday, and then you guys are going to hopefully we'll be announcing some dates coming up for this tour. Starting the East, hopefully kind of heading all the way to the West, you know, Vancouver, Calgary, you know, stuff like that. So hopefully that'll be great as well.
Yeah, that's what
is there anything
we're hoping.
Yep. Anything else that you guys want to add?
No, just thank you so much for having us on the show. We would love for everybody who's watching and listening to check out our stuff online. The new album is going to be up on all platforms on Friday, and we've got a lyric video coming out on Friday as well. You can pre-order any of our stuff if you want to download it from the platforms. It's all available. What we'll always do when people don't have to do that, if you have a Spotify or Google Play or all of that stuff, Apple Music, we're going to be there. So you can stream all our stuff on your regular subscriptions, or go over to SoundCloud and download our stuff for free.
That's
absolutely great. Best of luck, coming out on this tour, the album release, then the new album that you're going to be producing relatively shortly. And like I said, I really hope you guys can come down here to Vegas, or at least down here in the United States to do some touring. And absolute pleasure to have talked to you guys.
Thank you so much for having us on your show. It's amazing. So much.
No problem. And, yeah, we'll have you back on soon.
Sounds great. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Okay,
thank you. Bye.
Bye. That was Across the Board, everybody. You guys can check them out, Across the Board Band. I think it's acrosstheboard.ca or acrosstheboardband.ca. Just look Across the Board Band on Google. You'll be able to find their website, get their new album coming out. It's called Sonic Boom. You guys can check that out. Check out their YouTube channel as well, because they've done so much about it as well. So make sure you guys check that out. Our next guest is up here. He is a very talented actor. Very interesting story in terms of how he got to where he is today. Really just kind of rose out of tragedy to be able to do this, act and do some really cool stuff. His current episode arc on the series Sinners and Saints, and will be co-starring the upcoming Bobby Brown story on BET. Here we go. David Busby, are you there?
Hey. Yeah, I'm here. And the show is Saints and Sinners. It comes on Bounce TV. It airs Sunday nights, 8, 9 Eastern Standard Time. Definitely check with your local network to see what channel Bounce comes on. But hey,
I'm
to be on this show, man. What's going on?
Yeah. Glad for you to come on the show. I mean, just overcoming what you've overcome. I mean, that's just so amazing. To be able to survive two near-death experiences. I mean, and within a year. I mean, people react differently for those. I mean, how did you kind of get through some of that stuff where you were shot and nearly shot, and tell me a little bit about your mindset, kind of overcoming that.
Well, honestly, I wanted to use the experiences and somehow really benefit from them, because I look at everything pretty much that happens to you, you could make it benefit you. And how I figured to make it benefit for me would be to show these different stories that would never get told, and being able to show people the message behind it, like, and how you can use these different experiences and pull from them and really, like, help other people who've been through, nearly death experiences with PTSD, or even show some people how to avoid different situations so they don't end up in the type of situations that I was in. So, yeah, I just use it.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, continue. What were you saying?
I was going to say, I mean, were you acting before all this stuff happened, or was that something that kind of came out of the fact you were survived these two incidences?
Oh, yeah, this was before I started acting. I hadn't taken acting serious then. Before then, I was doing, like, other type of jobs. Like, I worked for TSA for a while, drove buses for a couple of years. I was doing those type of jobs and whatnot. But I used those experiences to finally do what I wanted to do. I figured, almost losing my life twice, you know, why not take that stab at acting, but give it all you got, you know?
You know, how was it for you to kind of get into acting? I mean, kind of what were the steps that you ended up taking to you know, go in? Because it seemed like it was relatively quick that you were able to get some of these bigger roles, but how was it for you? I mean, you know, obviously to grind through auditions and all that as well, but, you know, for you, to how did you kind of start your acting career?
Well, mine actually was like one of those it couldn't happen twice type of situations. Like, it was, I was very, very, like, fortunate and blessed to be in the one I was in, because I got shot in May. I was shot in the head in front of my grandparents' house while I was sitting in my car by some guys. after that, I think I came back to Atlanta, and I went to I seen that they were filming this show called Tales on BET, and I just went to the audition. I mean, I went to the taping as an extra, and someone on set recommended that I go to an acting class. Like, it's called the Premier Actors Network over in Decatur, Georgia. They recommended that I go there, so I went. And at the class, I had so much fun. Like, the coaching was good. The other actors that were there were really great. The instructor was Dwayne Boyd. At the class, I remember him saying to come back next week for a showcase. A new agency was looking for actors. And the agency's name is BYSB. And when I remember going back to go to the audition, I believe it was like a week later, I went back and I auditioned in front of Chris and Tay, or let me say I presented myself in front of Chris and Tay, and they asked me to do my slate. So mind you, I'm like very nervous. Then I just was like, I just snapped out of it, and I just, you know, gave them my name, my height, and where I was from. And I told them Inglewood, California. And then they stopped me and they told me about what happened to them when they visited the city, how they encountered like some gang activity where guys came up and asked them where they was from, why they were at the stoplight. And they told me how that was like the closest they've ever gotten to that type of experience. And then I told them what happened to me and how it affected me and how I grew from it. And they just stopped me and was like, "Yo, we want you to be with our agency. And that just changed my life right there. And then they were submitting me for different projects. I did a short film at first. I worked for free. And it was a beautiful experience. And after that, I worked on this other show called Atlanta Homicide. It's coming to TV One very soon. I believe it's supposed to be in June. But yeah, Atlanta Homicide, that's going to be on TV One. And then I got, I had auditioned while filming the TV One show. I had auditioned for Saints and Sinners. And I immediately got a call back maybe like a day or two later saying that I booked it. And I was just like, wow, that just changed. And working on that set was just incredible. Working with Vanessa Bell Calloway and Clifton Powell, Keith Robinson. It was, man, working with some legends in the game, and they had a lot of great like wisdom to share with me and a lot of good direction. I appreciated working with every last one of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to have been a huge learning curve for you in terms of being on set, and to, you know, and obviously the director has done a lot in terms of helping you out and the other actors as well. I mean, have you, you know, what have you learned kind of from a lot of the actors that you've worked with in terms of it? Because I know some of these have obviously plenty of more experience than you have. And, you know,
yeah.
How's it been to have kind of mentors like that on set?
What I learned from them, I'd say, is definitely living truthfully and to live in the moment, you know, because you get a lot of your best ideas when you just let go and live. You know. So, and I see them like really, really capture really good moments on the show. And that's pretty much what you learn. And you have to find that out for yourself. So it takes like, you know, digging within.
Well, it, well, speaking of which, obviously, I mean, your character on the show is, you know, it kind of a little bit ties into to some of your experience as well. I mean, how was it to get into the character and you know, kind of draw from some of the experiences that you've had?
Oh yeah, with playing Prophet, it wasn't like the guy. It was pretty familiar in my mind. Who they needed me to be. And, yeah, it really just clicked. You know what I'm saying? Like, I had to not judge the character and just, you know, allow Prophet to do his thing. So, yeah, it came to me eventually. It came to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to be able to see. I mean, the Atlanta scene is just so hopping now. It's kind of almost Hollywood East, pretty much. We're seeing a lot of productions out there as well. I mean, how's it for you to, you know, obviously being an actor out there, you know, were you aware how big the scene was? And, you know, how's it been for you? Obviously, you've been getting a lot of jobs lately. You know, how's it been for you as an actor?
Well, it's definitely been beneficial out here. I didn't come actually with the intent to act. Like, I came to find a new way of living, you know, a cheaper cost of living because it was so expensive in Los Angeles. So, but yeah, noticing it now is just like, wow, the work here is in abundance. And there's just so many creative people, you know what I mean? Not even on just an aspect of like, you know, doing major films or, you know, or TV shows. There's just a lot of creative people here in general who just want to put together good productions to get out to the masses. You know, I've been finding a lot of people on that wave. That's been pretty dope.
Yeah, now what's interesting too is the fact that the Bobby Brown story is coming out soon. I mean, you know, have you wrapped up on work on that or...
We just wrapped on the Bobby Brown story a couple weeks ago. Yeah, that's in post right now, so that's gonna drop September 4th. Definitely be on the lookout for that September 4th, the Bobby Brown story. It should be on BET. And yeah, but that production was really, really fun. Like, everyone on set was amazing. The women in wardrobe were incredible. The director, Kyle Scott, he was dope. Man, working with Mekhi Phifer was really, really dope. Man, that was like a really, really great moment for all of us young men on set who watched Soul Food, who watched Othello, who watched Paid in Full. Like, you know, working with him was really dope. And the way our characters just work together, it was just perfect. But yeah, Bobby Brown story is going to be a really, really good production. It's going to tell the story, the true story, you know, from Bobby's perspective.
Yeah, you know, I think you know I think there's you know, there's a lot of hype around about some of these V2 movies nowadays, these events that they put on too. So I'm very interested. Obviously you're going to get a lot of exposure on this as well. So, so obviously you're going to be a little bit excited about that. How's it for your family to see you start to have a little bit of success as an actor?
Yeah, they're very proud of me because they know I always wanted, you know, as a little boy, wanted to do something like this, but didn't know how to do it. And, they're very proud to see that I found a way. And
we talked about Mekhi Phifer. I mean, is there any other actors that you'd really love to work with?
I worked with him. I worked with T.K. Carter. That was really dope. And Woody McClain. it was cool working with him and Elijah Kip. Who else? Man, it was a lot of great people. You were asking me who else I would love.
Yeah,
would
who
like
else?
To work
I mean,
with.
Yeah, if you had the opportunity to work with somebody, is there any certain person that you'd like to work with?
Man, I would like to work with Michael B. Jordan. That would be pretty cool. I would like to work with him, Donald Glover. Yeah, that'd be a really dope experience working with them. I like their vision. Like, I really appreciate the productions they be on. So any productions that they put out, I love an opportunity to audition for and help bring to life.
Yeah, I would love to see you on Atlanta. I mean, that would make a lot of sense too. So we'll have to see if some of those opportunities come out for you. Obviously, like I said, the Bobby Brown thing is going to be a huge deal for you in terms of getting some exposure out there as well. So it's great to be able to see, like I said, you have so much success on there as well. Any other current projects that you have coming out?
Well, right now we're focusing on these, the ones that are out right now and promoting those. And I'm still auditioning, taking things as they come. So.
Yeah,
man, everyone be on the lookout for the Bobby Brown.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to the Bobby Brown one as well. I mean, you know, like I said, to have recovered for two near-death experiences like that, and just to turn that into something. And it's amazing to see how quickly that, like I said, that thing turned around for you. It was within a year or two where, you know, you were able to book some really good gigs coming up as well. So. Hopefully we'll be able to see some more of you coming up in the coming months, and hopefully, like I said, that Bobby Brown story will be huge for you in terms of coming up in September. So, any social media anywhere where people can find you?
Yeah, they can. You can follow me on Instagram at non-regular, like it's spelled the way it sounds. You can follow me on Facebook, David Busby, real simple. And yeah, man, definitely everybody, like, I would just encourage and influence and inspire people to just know yourself. Like, don't neglect knowing who you are. That's truly the most important.
Yeah, and then Saints and Sinners, when people check that out?
Oh, Sunday nights on Bounce Television at 8, 9 Eastern Standard Time. You got to check with your local networking program and to see what channel that is for you.
Yeah, and the Bobby Brown story comes out in September. You guys can check that out on BET, so you guys can check that out as well.
Oh, yeah, it's September 4th, the Bobby Brown story.
Yeah. David, it's been an absolute pleasure. Maybe we'll get you back on right before the Bobby Brown story hits, and best of luck to you.
Absolutely. Let's do it. Thanks, man. Peace and blessings to you.
Yeah, yeah. And best of luck coming up, and congratulations on the success. And that was David Busby. Everybody, you guys can check out David Busby. Non-regular on social media. Like I said, you guys should check out his shows coming up. I should have a guest next week. I just got to put up the thing. I got to get the second guest on there too. So we'll have another show next week. 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. You guys can check that out as well. We'll be working. I think I have to do a couple things, but we're probably going to be. The podcast is going to be available soon on Alexa. So you can simply just yell to Alexa somewhere in Vegas podcast, and you guys will be able to listen to the podcast via Alexa. I'm not sure if that's set up yet or I have to set up something, but I know that's coming as well. There's a couple other places you can get it now too. I'll have to take a look at that, and I can tell you guys more about that next week. But you guys can get it on Stitcher Radio, this podcast on Stitcher Radio, also on Apple Podcasts as well, or pretty much most of where you could get your regular podcasts will have that up. So
It's just the Alexa thing that's going to be a little bit different. So you guys definitely check that out as well. With that in mind, we'll see you guys next week, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, here on the podcast on Monday. With that in mind, we'll talk to you guys next week.